woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
Oh, it's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
Found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know, that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What the f*** are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sun.
Well, welcome back to Stacking Giants. I'm Tom Holly, Mr. Matt Weber on the board. We have Mr. Kevin O'Neill with us. I think your girl, Maddie, yesterday, AV, finally admitted on her big move to the right that Lou is her major influencer.
Well, Lou is a good influence in a lot of ways. I think he's out there in a lot of ways too. But I love Lou.
He was—he's the—he's the COVID, shall we say, in the move.
Let's just say Lou is the conservative Sherpa for Stocks and Jocks.
Yes. Then there's other guys that are wannabes, you know, guys like Kevin and Flanny and Carl. You know.
Someday I hope to measure up, and yeah. You know, maybe I can be Lou when I grow up. even though I think I'm a little older than he is.
Actually, I know he's older. I think he's our age. I mean, he's my age.
Oh, well, then he's an ancient. Okay.
Well, let's put that. He was in the Air Force Academy in '72 when the swine flu vaccine came out, so he had to be right with us.
He's right in there, yeah. That would put him right in there. Okay, he's an old, he's a geezer.
Yeah, yeah.
He's probably out there in Colorado now getting up to go for a walk, and he's got on some sandals with some black knee socks and plaid shorts.
I think he's probably going out and, you know, climbing mountains with the new bride. I think she's a mountain climber. That would be something that
That's just what he needs is to fall off a cliff.
Yeah, well, I don't think any of us need that.
Yeah, we don't want that.
He does say that he packs a big gun in case they run into some mountain lion or something. It's probably not a bad idea, but
mountain lion or an Antifa protester?
Yeah, one or the other.
Did you see what they did? Do you see what they did in Seattle yesterday?
Something about letting the right wing fight with the left wing. What's that all about?
No. They went to the police station, cemented the door shut, and then tried to light it on fire.
Good Lord!
Unbelievable. Do you think maybe we should get some people back to work in school? Was that something we should...
I don't think any of these people were working in the first place.
That's possible. Because I was reading that that now they've got the right going out to some guys that are like the lunatic right with the automatic weapons and all that stuff, that they're allowing them to engage with the demonstrators now and just kind of staying away from the fight. Just...
Yeah, I always correct this, though. They're not automatic weapons. Semi-automatic weapons are not nearly the same as automatic weapons. You're not legally allowed to buy automatic weapons.
But there are kits one can buy, I believe. And people will do it for you, from what I understand.
Well, those are illegal, too.
Yes.
Those are the bump stocks.
Let's not,
people who really get automatic weapons are getting them illegally, generally from out of the country. They are something that the gangs get a lot.
I would say illegal guns.
It's you know, the same people where they are involved in the drug trade are also involved in weapons trade.
Yeah, so guns are illegal in Chicago. How's that working out?
You know what? They blame Indiana. They say, well, everybody just goes to Indiana because they're easy to get there. And that's such a BS argument. You know, I'm sure there are some, but the number, when they confiscate weapons, the number that actually are from Indiana is a very small percentage.
It's from the burbs in Chicago. A lot of them.
It's still Illinois, though, and so you still have some pretty restrictive laws. No, look, the biggest problem is criminals shooting things up. That's the lion's share of the shootings that you have in Chicago and they're acquiring their weapons from the same sources where they're acquiring drugs that they sell.
I have
it's another reason to clean up the drug laws, because you probably can't at this point, at least not in the short term, but if you can clean up a little bit the domains of people who operate illegally and operate major corporations illegally. They're not incorporated, not legally incorporated. But if you do that, then you actually would have a fighting chance to try and clean up some of the illegal gun traffic along with it.
There I was, minding my own business as usual, as a janitor. Just to show you how pervasive this is in Chicago. I mean, it was back then. And I was at the Froebel Upper Grade Center at 18th, make that 20th and Damon, which they were doing some bilingual work. And I think, you know, I think was involved in it, Kevin? It had to be, well, I think it was a lot of Gutierrez's in the Hispanic community, but the guy who was the ringleader, the head teacher was Gutierrez. So he's, and I don't know if this guy's father or if he's, I don't know, how old is that guy? It could be him. I mean, he's in his 70s, isn't he? If he is, it could be him. But anyway. Or
Luis Gutierrez?
Yeah. I don't know if he's tired.
Maybe.
Anyway, but it was, so they got these people, and it was an interesting plan. It was a teach kids English thing. So what they did is they got some money, and they had some teachers that would teach English in the morning. And then for 2 or 3 hours, there were a bunch of kids, and they actually worked pretty hard, and would sit down with one-on-one with another kid their age and go through conversational English versus Spanish. And, you know, a lot of the kids, you know, really tried, and some, of course, didn't. The usual routine. But because the only way you could get a sub-janitor, meaning me, was if you had something going on in the school. So the logic was, the regular janitors, the two schmoes that were there, and I do mean schmoes, would be cleaning the rest of the school building, okay, like they're supposed to do in the summer, varnishing all the floors and back when you varnish floors. And the new guy, meaning me, would either help them out so they could now deal with the fact that there's people in the school and then all the washrooms had to be washed and all that kind of stuff. So the deal was these guys didn't want just a half a day's pay because the kids were only there for half a day. So they you know, bitched and moaned, so finally they got the full day's pay. But they were absolutely convinced that if they ever left early, that some eye would be upon them, because they had to fight their way through it. So the kids would leave at 12, and these guys would sit in one room, read the newspaper, and basically BS till 2:30 every day. So that was that game. But the interesting part is one of the janitors was a total loser, and, so the engineer he had just been in a school in a really bad neighborhood, and the janitor says to him, "Hey, you got a gun when you go to those places?" "No, I don't. I thought about it, because last week he was in some school, and he went to check the doors at the far end, and all of a sudden he hears all this running, and kind of barely made it back to his office and called police. And he said, the thought has crossed my mind, even though he was an Army guy, but I don't really want to be shooting anybody. But anyway, so the guy goes, "Well, tomorrow I'll bring some in." So the guy comes in the next day with this big shopping bag with the, you know, how people used before there were plastic bags before your time, Eddie. When you go to the store, you'd bring your mom would bring her shopping bag with the handles, and inside they'd put the brown paper bags. So of course the guy's got like a couple of things of celery in the brown paper bag, and below the brown paper bag at the bottom of the thing, are there like 8 guns. From a Magnum to a police service revolver. Here's one this size, here's one this size. And they're all displayed on the desk. This guy, if no way he could have got a card of any sort. Well, if this loser's got 8 of them, how many of these things are out there? And I think the answer is a real lot. And I'm sure those are still in circulation somewhere. I mean, that, even though that was how many years ago. I bet they're not melted. Just saying. So, Kevin, I got another quick thing on the COVID, another new low. Well, 2 new lows in Illinois. And then I want to talk a little bit about what's going on with the college sports and what it all means.
Okay, and I got something I want to get to as well. So
all right.
About crisis management. So yeah, well let's get rolling.
Well, the new low is one of the ladies here in the office. Now, she, of course, she and her husband have had the COVID, right? And she's got antibodies blinking, right? So she's a perfect person to give, you know, the plasma and everything, but nobody's asked her, even though I think she's volunteered. So anyway, she's their kid. They're in a North Shore, North Side suburb. I'll leave the name out. And her husband is a pretty big shot in the Park District. So they decide that their kid is not, the school's closed after saying they're open, and so now the kid's got nowhere to go. So the citizens come up with a hue and cry regarding what are we going to do all day? I mean, these kids, there's nobody home. So guess what they decide to do?
Fire.
The kids are, the kids who have both parents at work and have a, need a place to go, instead of going to the school, will now go to the Park District, where people will watch them there, and they got, you know, bathrooms and stuff, and they can do their work at the tables in the Park District instead of going to the school. Is that about the dumbest thing? Is that about the dumbest thing?
Yeah, that's much better. That's way better.
Yeah.
You know, I think I might have mentioned this on Friday. In Oak Creek Franklin School District in Wisconsin, at the last minute, pulled a switch and said, "We're not going to open. It's all going to be virtual." So the parents got really upset, so they came up with an alternate plan there. They said, well, at the school, we'll open a day camp. Or what are they? I think they called it day camp. You know, they provided a list of things that the kids should bring to day camp, which was stuff like, school books, notepads,
yep.
pens, pencils, all that kind of stuff. And they'll charge you $100 a week for it.
That's special.
You want to go to your public school for the day?
And do you see your favorite governor? Now, when if you're in a restaurant, now we haven't had anything that I can think of that's caused a problem in any of these restaurants that are outside and half open and all this stuff. Yet they just got to keep digging. So now the latest is, if you see your food or your drink coming, you got to wing your mask on. Even though the wait staff already has a mask on, you got to wing one on to be masked to mask or something.
Crazy, you know, we're just in such a weird time. What was the joke I saw the other day? It was guy walks into a New Orleans bar, says, "I want a Corona and two hurricanes." You know, so yeah. A small group. I want a Corona and two hurricanes, and the bartender said, "Yeah, that's 2020."
What? I don't recall us being in this much craziness. I mean, 68 was pretty bad, but. We didn't seem to lose all common sense in our daily lives. I mean, how do you come back from this? All of a sudden, you decide, okay, well, this crazy stuff I was doing last week, I'm not going to do anymore. Like, we're going to go to school, we're going to go to work. I don't know how that even... My barber had been in a CBOE building for, I don't know how many years, 25, 30 years. They're gone yesterday. Maddie Weber and I were talking on the way in, and in a lot of places, this is getting... You know, worse and worse. And the interesting part about the market, which obviously we should probably talk more of these days, is when we were talking, I don't know if you listened, Kevin, all these stocks that are in this, I'll say, sort of holding pattern, the ones that are really being damaged, that have dropped and have kind of had this little rally back, and all of a sudden, but they're still losing money. I mean, everybody still has this idea that somehow or another, you know, in 2 weeks, 4 weeks, that, you know, some semblance of normalcy is going to take over. I if you'd have bet me on Easter, I would have said by August, things would be a lot better. Or the market and everything around it would start to reflect it. I'm wrong on the better part, I think, appreciably better anyway. Although more and more people are going to work, but there are the people that, it seems to be necessary people for the other people to not go to work. It's the oddest class thing I've ever come across. But it's there. And now I don't know how these. I mean, when are we going to see? Hopefully we don't. When are we going to see a huge implosion of these stocks that are just losing money every single day? And really, is it going to be? You know, is the market quote correct? I mean, it's hard to tell what it's doing with the Fed putting the money in like it is. But is the market correct that there really is only going to be 200 firms when we're all over, and the 200 stocks are going to be worth 90 bazillion, and the rest of them are going to be down. The Russell 4000, if there is one, will be worth, you know, 48 cents. Is that really where we're heading? I mean, it seems if you ignore the Fed, and you say where they're putting the dough and how some of these places people can get money for virtually nothing. Other people are still having to pay a lot for it. I mean, if you get rid of that part of it, and you assume that the government's going to stop pouring out money at some point here because they don't have any more, is that what the market's predicting? Is it smart enough to see through the Fed and say, of course Amazon and Apple are going up. They're going to be one of 50 companies that are still here. I mean, are we going to let that happen to the place? Because obviously you're in...
Well, apparently, yes. You sent an article out overnight about Amazon and Amazon lobbying for more regulation in California because they know it's going to hurt their competitors more than them. That they have the resources to spend on all the compliance that's related, and they know that their smaller competitors do not. So, yeah, when government intervenes, it favors the big guy every time.
Every time. Yeah, I have a,
and yet they do it in the name of the little guy. I don't know if they're just stupid or if it's intentional. I really don't.
I have a question for you two, more online mavens than me. I mean, everybody thinks my girlfriend thinks. Well, most girlfriends think their boyfriends are nuts, but she's absolutely convinced.
Lucky guess in your case.
Yeah,
right?
Lucky guess. I mean, everything she does, she gets from Amazon. And of course, I say, what are you doing? Well, why do you continue to, you know, because she gets the Prime and gets free delivery, it doesn't matter. She's in love with the place. I bought one thing on Amazon. It was a horrible situation, and I've never bought anything since. And I've lived perfectly fine. And if I get stuff online, I'll get it from Walmart or get some other place. There's a million places. If you don't absolutely have to go to Amazon, believe me, you can live easily without them. Just saying. But, so, because I got this way back in the day, Matt, you remember the one? When we first signed up for a place to do our streaming for us, stacks, this would be, well, how many years ago, May? They wanted us to have an Apple machine for whatever reason, an Apple router, which most routers are not Apples, are they? Man, they're another brand. So these guys are absolutely bound and determined we needed this Apple router. So I go to Amazon and I buy the damn thing. Gets here, doesn't work. You know, so I call Amazon and I say, hey, what the bleep? It's not ours. It's one of our third-party providers. I said, I bought it on your platform. That doesn't matter. You know, which is exactly what they're arguing about in California, right? This is 8-10 years ago. That's the story, is you have to guarantee stuff on your platform. And Amazon's now convinced they can either fight the consumer or whatever. They think this will be a big problem for other people. But now, how's Amazon made it 10 years without doing this? So at the end of the day, it turns out the thing was so old. In that article I sent you, Kevin, they're talking about people buying things that were, you know, old or something. So I call Apple and I said, "Are you guys gonna tell me how to fix this damn thing?" "No, you got to sign up for a service agreement." "Isn't there a guarantee?" "Yeah, the guarantee was 3 years ago. That thing's 3 years old." So it was an out of date product that whoever was sent us. Of course, they said, "What do you mean? You got it? It's yours." So we have basically ate the thing for several hundred dollars. And I'm saying, I'm never going to get a thing again from Amazon, and I never have. But, I mean, it's exactly, when I read that article, I'm like, this is me 8 years ago. Nothing's changed. They still get to send you crappy stuff, and Amazon doesn't back it up?
Yeah, it is crazy. You know, my experiences with Amazon are generally way better, and including when I've had to return things. So I've never had a problem, but... I'm not denying that you did. And I think Amazon's distribution is pretty interesting. I've had a couple of packages in recent months that were delivered to the wrong house. What they do is when they deliver now and they send you a text telling you they delivered, they also send you a picture of the package sitting on your porch, wherever they left it. And so... What was interesting about that is that I would get a picture and I would see, oh, that's the house up the street, and I'd just walk up and get it. What's interesting is their delivery people don't look at addresses. They have their GPS system and it says stop here. And so when that's a little off, that's obviously something they haven't perfected. It's pretty good because most stuff gets where it's supposed to be. But I would say two missed deliveries in, 3-4 months seems like a lot, considering I don't have the Amazon truck showing up here every day.
Yeah, it would.
What they are doing, and what they're doing really well, and it's kind of dragged the rest of the industry with it, is, and I've sent you stuff about Target, about Walmart, and what things that they're doing. They've really pushed distribution, retail distribution, and made an art of it, and made it really, you know, a model for what other people can and should do. You do see small businesses, small grocery stores, you know, things like that, that just, they're still sending people out in the aisle to shop for you, essentially, and that's just not cost effective. But you're also seeing people who actually are learning from what Amazon's doing. So there's some value there.
You know who else is doing that?
Basically using monopolistic behavior or market, you know, their market dominance to affect legislation is out of line, and the government should tell them to go scratch, and the and there's probably some wonderful room for antitrust suits there.
Except that the younger generation doesn't know what antitrust is, and they think that's good business.
Yeah, well, the younger generation, if they took a class from me, knows what antitrust is.
Hey, you know who else is doing that?
That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard, by the way. And the younger generation hasn't been in charge for the last 40 years.
Get in charge.
What are you talking about?
Get in charge.
Your generation has overseen this for 40 years.
Manny, I've probably talked to 100 people. I don't accuse you of this. By the way, you're not young anymore.
You just said the younger generation.
And
this started in the 80s, Chief, and when you guys took over.
What I'm saying is, I understand that I'm not being as communicative as I ought to be. My point is that because it hasn't happened, all right, in our generation, you're right, we have not done the job properly. But what it's left with, if you talk to people at 35 and you read them the Sherman Act, they wonder what you're talking about. They don't see any problem with Pfizer buying Merck. What do you mean? That's just what businesses do. Yeah, but they're going to raise all the prices. Well, yeah, that's good business. I'm saying they don't. It hasn't been done.
The Sherman Act was written in the 1800s.
I understand that.
It's 130 years old.
It's still our antitrust.
We haven't had antitrust in the last 40 or 50 years.
What I'm saying is,
so what are you talking about? The 35-year-old.
If I can jump in here, I think what he's talking about is that the demographic that is the bread and butter shopper at Amazon doesn't realize that they're doing business with a monopolist. Now, look, I shop there, and I realize I'm doing business with them. So Matt, your point is right.
Let me try and explain myself.
Because most consumers ultimately are going to behave in their own self-interest.
Well, you're
right about that, but I would argue that everyone shops at Amazon.
All right, let me change the focus just a second and explain what I'm talking about. What I'm saying is my group, me, who studied this stuff, and so did Kevin, when you go and buy a car...
Back when it was written?
Back when, well, pretty much.
A couple years later.
Well, we were around when they broke up...
I was there for the Clayton Act.
They broke up the airlines. They broke up Illinois Bell, or the Bell companies on our watch. So, some has happened in our generation. We were very young. But I'm saying right now... I'll explain it this way, Matty.
Say it wasn't your generation. You weren't in charge when those things were happening.
No. We were younger than you.
It was the generation before you. Your generation completely ripped it apart.
Yeah. Well, what I'm saying is right now, if you go to buy a car and they say zero interest for 5 years, that is patently illegal by the Clayton Act. Patently illegal. Now, I know that, right? And our generation hasn't done anything about it, which I'm pissed off about.
And started it.
I'm going to say that if you got down with your drinking buddies on Monday night, they would say, what's wrong with that? That's the distinction I'm trying to make.
That you know something's wrong with it, but still do it every day, and we don't know something's wrong with it and do it every day.
I'm saying you drive it out of the vernacular. How many people have you talked to that said, well, Amazon's business model is to put everybody else out of business and then raise the prices? They never add on, which, by the way, is a felony. Right? That's my whole point. It's not much of a point, but...
I don't know that they are raising prices.
Well, they will.
That's part of their business.
Well, I mean, you don't do it the next day.
Maybe they will, Tom. But on the other hand, when you have fairly strong competitors pushing back now, like Target, like Walmart, and any number of other large retailers,
who are also monopolists.
Walmart's
no, really, Walmart is no different. Their competition is the people who have, you know, who aren't narrow product lines. And so that's why I keep mentioning Target and Walmart, because, you know, they are setting up really good, efficient distribution systems as well. They have the products to compete, whereas if you look at, I don't know, Home Depot or somebody like that, yes, you can order online, but you can only get Home Depot stuff. You know, part of Amazon's allure is that you can pretty much find anything you need on Amazon.
I have to break.
The only stuff that you can't find there, you have to go to Craigslist for.
Well, after break, we'll hit this a little bit more. Then I want to talk more about the college sports and stuff. What do we have the teams playing and half not? That'll be interesting. SP Futures up 2, NASDAQ Futures up 50. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, I'm David Andelman, founder and president of DAX Research, a registered commodity trading advisor. I'm also a wealth manager and a frequent contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio show. For more than 30 years, professional traders at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, including four past CME presidents, have chosen DAX Research to help guide their trading. That same research is now available to you. We are offering three of our research newsletter, the Daily World News Report, our daily stock and futures trading recommendations, and our twice weekly top three tiers of recommended stocks, including potential shorts. Each of these reports are available via email before the market opens. Go to our website, www.dacsresearch.net, to obtain the tool that meets your trading and investment needs. Or call me and get 2 weeks free with a one-month subscription. 1-800-821-4968. Stock and futures trading have risk of loss and are not suitable for everyone.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Here.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allen, Mr. Matt Weber, Mr. Kevin O'Neill with us as well. SP Futures up 2, NASDAQ Futures up 52, Dow Futures down 43. Apple's up 440, but just whatever we were stacking this. Well, Microsoft's up 192. Obviously, those stocks got to go up every day, but virtually every other stock in the Dow is down here for some reason. Not much, but they are down some. Over in Europe, we've got DAX up 66.5%, FTSE down 10.2%, CAC around up 15.3%. Those guys are slow in Europe. I wonder with this COVID stuff, man. Are those guys all on holiday, or you can't leave, or what's the deal? I bet the travel over there isn't like it is on a normal year. It can't be.
Wouldn't think so.
Nikkei down 5, call that flat. Shanghai down 43, that's 1.3%. The Hang Seng is up 5, so call that flat. So over there, the Shanghai is down, the rest of them are flat. That's a lot. Bonds, 0.71, so they're inching up there in a 10-year yield, up from 0.65 last week. The Bund, minus 0.40, that's as high as we've seen that in a while. In Japan, over 0.04, so we got a little uptick in 10-year rates here today. Oil, down 13 cents, 43.22. It's down 13, but it's still higher than yesterday because we were 42.70 yesterday during the show. Brent, down a dime, 45.76, but this is actually the higher end of the West Texas range here for a while. Natural gas, 2.55, up another 6 cents. Again, these guys are being used a lot for this heating and the stuff in the, not to mention, the oil wells and the gas wells in the Gulf, most of those are shut down now. The hurricane coming. RBOB, minus 2 cents, 137. We've got gold up 230, 1925, but a full, I'm going to say 125 down from the high. Silver up 23 cents, 26.51. It's hanging closer to the high than the gold is for some reason. Copper up 2 cents, 295. Looking like maybe it's going to make another run at 3. Anybody got for his traffic, weather, sports? Hey, this no-hitter reminds me of Z's no-hitter with nobody in the place.
Yeah, 38 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. Off to a great start on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways here on a Wednesday morning. No issues on the Edens or Kennedy. Eisenhower and Stevenson, nice and quiet. Ryan, I-57 and the Bishop Ford looking good. Same for Lakeshore Drive. Only crash in the area is to the southwest. Wolf Road at 83rd Street. There was a crash with crews on the scene working to get that cleared up. But everything else looking good out there. Weather today, more sunshine, more heat and humidity, a high of 93, but it'll feel even more unpleasant than that with high humidity today. Right now it's clear and 77, going up to a steamy high of 93. In Phoenix, much hotter, but a dry heat, partly cloudy skies with a high of 113 today. Right now it's clear and 88. Big story of the night last night in sports, as Chief mentioned, Lucas Giolito and the White Sox shut out the Pirates 4-0, but it was Giolito who stole the show, tossing a no-hitter, the first of the 2020 season in Major League Baseball. He struck out 13 guys, walked just one, was unhittable the entire night, literally. It was the 19th no-hitter in White Sox franchise history. It was the first ever no-hitter with no fans in the stands. This is an interesting stat. The previous lowest attendance for a no-hitter was 500 fans back on August 4th, 1884. Last night, no fans in attendance, obviously, as Lucas Giolito's first no-hitter in his career. So congratulations to him and the Red Hot White Sox, who have now won 8 out of 9. The Cubs were blown out in Detroit last night, losing to the Tigers 7-1, snapped their two-game brief winning streak. And the Diamondbacks lost to the Rockies 5-4. Chief.
How many people do you think were at that game in Milwaukee?
Maybe 10,000.
It was that many?
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of Cub fans that drove up there, but it was short notice. I would say no more than 10,000.
What was the story with that?
The game was supposed to be in Houston, and they had a hurricane.
That's right.
So they were both sort of in the Midwest, and so they played the game in Milwaukee Stadium because the Brewers were out of town.
You know, Z's still pitching.
Yeah, he's in some independent league.
Yeah, but what's her name? Pearl saw him play up at the against the Chicago Dogs.
That's awesome. I'd love to get him on our softball team if we could.
No kidding.
Talk about a guy.
Yeah, he can hit the ball a long way.
Oh, God, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, he's a serious athlete.
A little about Giolito, too. Usually when you strike out a lot of guys, you throw a lot of pitches. 13 strikeouts through 101 pitches.
I was reading about it on Yahoo last night. They said he had three pitches going perfect. He had his fastball, his slider, and his change. And the amount of strikeouts was fastball, slider, change. And he turned around and walked back to the dugout. I couldn't hit any one of the three.
And he said he shook off McCann. He shook off McCann once.
Wow.
The whole game. So they were pretty locked in together, pretty in tune. And he threw strike one on 20 of 28 pitchers on the first pitch.
Wow, he produced 30 swing and misses, second most in a no-hitter since they started tracking that back in 1988. And his 13 swing and misses on his changeup were the most in his career.
Wow.
It was sitting there watching it, and I tuned in. I had a class last night, so I tuned in, I don't know, fifth or sixth inning, somewhere in there. And just his command was jaw-dropping. You know, everything was just on the edges. Even when he missed, it was still on the edges of the strike zone, when he missed the target. Great achievements are fun to watch. And as I always tell my classes, there are only two things that terribly offend me. One of them's bad baseball, and the other one's bad management. There was no bad baseball in that game. Now, the Cubs game, on the other hand, there was some bad baseball. I guess the one bad thing was that there was a base running gaffe by Encarnacion, but which was actually crazy. He overran third base and got nailed on the way back after perfectly reading a soft liner to the outfield, then blowing the stop sign. So.
But hey, just one quick thing about the antitrust, let's start talking about something different. But I don't think people, I mean, Maddie, I guess I may sound like the thing I don't think people, unless you've seen it happen, and I lived through the bells coming apart. Unless you've seen it happen, the ability of the government to deal with it, even if they wanted to. Is so long, and it's so much money. It was 10 years to break up Standard Oil. It was like 10 years to break up the phone company. This is not something that, if you decide it happens, if all of a sudden somebody someday decides that Amazon or Google are too big, and you get buffoons like Cramer coming out and saying, look at how much they've done, how they've made your life better, how many people have worked there, you know, just absolving them from all guilt. You're immediately going to get that, and then when you get into the courts, it'll be at least a decade. And the amount of money.
Well, people were saying the same thing about the phone company at the time.
Yeah.
And look at where MCI's suit led. Now, MCI, you're right, it dragged on so long, MCI never really got to survive from it.
No.
They never got the benefit, and it was their lawsuit that got it started. And for anybody who doesn't remember it or isn't old enough to remember it, what happened was MCI built out this microwave telephone network, and it was going city to city, and what they wanted because the phone companies were monopolies, phone company was a monopoly, and it offered long distance service. They prevented access to that long distance service from the public network. So what you had to do was you had to call an 800 number to make a long-distance call on MCI, and then from the 800 number, you would then key in the number that you're going to call. So it was cheaper. It was a money saver for a lot of people, but it was a pain in the neck to use, and so that suppressed the number of people. All they wanted was what turned out to be the Touch 1, the dial long-distance.
Yeah.
You know, all they wanted was that kind of access and customers to have a choice, and the phone company wouldn't let it. Now, that was clearly using their monopoly in landlines to prevent somebody from from competing in a related business, which is illegal. But there was nobody trying to compete before then, so they thought they could fight it off as long as they could. It took years for MCI to win, and the financial damage in the meantime was just more than the company could overcome, and they wound up selling it off, and the technology changed anyway. But where are we today? You don't pay for long distance anymore.
Well, but what I'm saying is what happens in the meantime, and a lot of times your legislators and even us don't really understand how cheaply something could be done if it was competitive. You look at the airline rates back when they were fixed by government. Well, not fixed by government. The airlines proposed them, the government approved them. The airline rates were so high, and all of a sudden somebody says, "Hey, I can fly from here to Chicago to LA, and I can charge, you know, $150, not like $550. Somebody goes, really? You know, well, they fought that for, I'm going to say, close to a decade. And how much money did they make in the meantime? That's a problem, Eddie. When you let it happen, let's look at Menards and Home Depot. I mean, they basically put everybody else out of business, right? I mean, I guess you could still buy lumber at Fox's or someplace, but you really got to look for them. Now, if all of a sudden,
we have local one, Big C locally is.
I'm saying there are some of those around, but the intention of them is 10 years from now, you know, Big C will sell out to somebody, or the kids won't want to do it, or something. You know, that's what happens. They just drain out over time. These big guys are just, because they're financing, if Big C wants to advance and get some, they're going to pay 15% for money, or not 15, they'll pay 9. These other guys will pay 2. Or, you know, but my point is, if it takes 10 years, and then when you start seeing how much the competitor wants to charge versus them, you sit there and go, holy bleep, Batman, how much are these guys charging? I mean, we did all that work on the back. I went to Home Depot to get the, of course, I bought this really good wood, and I wanted stainless steel screws. So I go to the Home Depot, and now the wood, you know, I got them in Menards. I'm not complaining about the price of the wood. It was pretty competitive across the board, which is what you see. But then when I went to get the fasteners, I paid, I'm going to say the back porch cost us $1,000 in screws because they're all high-end stainless steel. They won't even, if you have in L.A., they won't even rust. On the ocean. I would say that would have been $2,500 at Menards or Home Depot. So the stuff you're getting screwed on, you don't even know. They're not going to be competitive on stainless steel screws. Yeah, but I got those online from those guys. Anyway, Kevin, if you had a page two, as Paul Harvey would say, and Maddie, I'd love you involved in this, what is the difference in how, like, the Irish are dealing with, say, not playing football, even though it's not official. Even though I guess they just scheduled another game. Anyway, let's say they don't play, or the Big Ten's not playing. Let's use them. Now, they're still going to be paying, they're going to be paying variable costs on the scholarships for the kids this year. I guess they're going to be, are they paying all the coaches, even the assistants, you know, the millions of dollars there? Is Harbaugh going to get his?
Yeah, I think many of them have taken pay cuts almost all colleges. Everybody except Nick Saban.
Okay.
I say that tongue in cheek, but I'm probably right.
So you're paying me $2.5 million to coach. We can't coach, so pay me $1 million.
Well, yeah, except the SEC's planning to play, so we'll see what happens. But yeah, look, this has been a big hit to budgets.
Oh yeah,
to all kinds of budgets. And if you remember, football pays the freight for athletic departments, at least at the major schools. So football pays pays all the bills. Basketball may or may not be profitable, depending on the school. And then after that, everything is just cost, and it's cost that justifies the business model of not paying the football players, because it's consistent treatment for what they, for the other scholarship athletes. But it's just, you know, they can't afford to not have football. So Big Ten schools, there's so much revenue in the Big Ten that they can afford to absorb not playing. I don't know if they're going to play in the spring or not, or, you know, what they're planning to do with that. But the smaller programs that have football revenue are not going to survive. The conference, in my opinion, that's in the best position right now is the Big East, because they've already built out their athletic departments with the idea that basketball is their best money maker. And they don't offer the full gamut of sports in everything. You know, they don't have a sport. You know, everything with people on scholarships. They're in position to conduct business as usual, assuming that the basketball season starts.
Well, I'm ashamed to say this because I love sports so much. I have never been to a less than. Big shot game. I mean, I've gone to a couple of Ohio State games. I've gone to a few Ohio State games. I've gone to a couple of Wisconsin games. I've never gone to like a Northern Illinois game or a Western Michigan game or
a game where there's 6,000 people in the stands.
Well, I guess I'm trying to find out what's
like Northwestern most years.
Well, okay, yeah, but I'm saying if I went to a Eastern Illinois game, would I find 6,000 people there, 4,000 students at $10 a ticket, and 2,000 other people at 25 a ticket? I mean, give me some kind of a clue as what the revenue there is, if either of you know. Because there's no TV. There might be radio.
Well, the Mac will have a TV contract, and that's where they get their revenue. No, it's not a $25 million a year per school TV contract like you'd get out of the SEC. It's not the Big Ten's, you know, oh gosh, they're way over 30 per school on all their combined media. So it's not that big, but it's, you know, it's big enough. And then you throw in their bye games where they, you know, play once or twice in the fall against a major conference team and get $1 million, and that's how they run their athletic department.
But they're...
You do a bye game in basketball that's going to draw against a major conference team, it still might be a decent payday for your basketball program, and all these teams that I see in December all the time. But it's not $1 million. It's much less. Basically, it's expenses and a little bit of a check, but it funds their budget.
So if you're St. Webby's out of some place and you play the Irish or the Illini in November, basketball, what do you think you get for that game?
I'm not sure what the dollar amount is, but it's not nearly, it's not. What they do is they go on tour. So you'll see Mississippi Valley State coming through South Bend and playing a game at Purdue. And, it just becomes this road trip where they go get in 3, 4, 5 games, and they may get their brains beat in, but they get some money so that they can go back and compete in their regular conference.
Plus in basketball, you're not getting hurt. You're actually learning playing against better people. So it's not like it's not like football.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with it. The games are not that competitive and they're not that entertaining, but I still go.
Well, but it's not like football where you're going to get your head beat in by somebody who's you should not be on the same field with.
Right, who's 40 pounds heavier at the same position and faster and stronger and all. Yeah.
Yeah,
it's not the same. Hey, I need to get into something real quickly.
Go ahead.
I want to if you wouldn't mind. And I'll tweet it right now. There's a really good TED Talk by a woman named Melissa Agnes. If you watch the video, you'll realize she's Canadian because she'll say organization and things like that. But she talks about crisis management.
She doesn't say hey hoser, eh? Doesn't say hey or hoser.
Yeah, she doesn't say that,
right.
But clearly there is, and it's she's really good. But I was thinking about that as I watched things unfold in Kenosha over the weekend and into the week, and there's a couple of things because it took forever for Kenosha's officials to make a statement about it, and I think there's some lessons for a lot of our listeners who own businesses, who perhaps are senior managers at larger businesses, even if they're not the owners, because you can always have some kind of crisis that happens or something where, one of your employees, you could be a plumbing contractor and I can create a scenario. In fact, I have created a scenario that we use for class discussion on this, where you say one of your people or an electrical contract. One of your electricians is out in the truck, gets in a fender bender with somebody, they get out, they start arguing, and he punches the guy and drops him to the ground. And somebody catches that on their cell phone. And it's viral before your phone rings.
Right.
And it's not the whole story. It's not anything like that. Are you prepared to respond? You're an electrical contractor. You've got like three people working for you, and you're probably not prepared to respond. And you take that up to larger businesses. You could be running a rail company, and you have a train derails with toxic chemicals, and that's gone viral before you even know about it because that happens so fast now. She gets into a couple of things. One is you have to be prepared. You have to run scenarios. You have to do all of that. But she gets into this concept where she talks about a trust bank, where you have to do things that build trust so that when you have a situation like this, people actually believe that you're going to deal with it effectively, honestly, transparently. And that takes time. And so I was thinking about that in terms of the police. And think they train their officers. Now, I'm looking at the Kenosha situation. I don't know the whole story there, although it's going to, you know, so there may be some mitigating circumstances for the cop, although I don't understand seven shots. So whatever else, whatever other explanation there's going to be, I'm going to be a really, really hard sell as to why
Kevin,
that many put, shots were necessary.
Kevin, they put seven into...
You know, I want to take the situation itself out of there because I don't want to judge that, but I do want to say, how would you deal with the community? If you were a police commissioner, small city like Kenosha, larger city, it doesn't matter. How would you deal with the community to make... To build some trust? And, you know, I think of things like, in their case, they have all kinds of training exercises for how to handle difficult situations. What would prevent them from doing that outdoors and having and inviting people in to sit and watch? And see how the officers are trained.
I'm going to say, Kevin...
Or in a high school gym and invite people in to do it. Invite the media in to cover it. You know, to run through scenarios that people don't really understand that happen. I mean, and to do that on a regular basis, to get involved with local churches, because especially in black community, the churches are really, really important, and to get involved with them and do the same kinds of things. What would stop that so that when something happens, that at least you have some people who have an understanding of the other sides of the story or the potential for other sides of the story? And then as soon as you get news of it, you're out in front. You're in front of a microphone right away. You're and you're talking about it, and you're talking about it in a measured, confident way that will give people an idea that they don't need to riot. You're going to get to the bottom of it.
I think you're 100% right, Kevin, except I really do believe that if you and I, and we'll bring, since Russell just brought me coffee, he's my hero today. I'm not even going to say a word about his dress shirt and shorts, but
it's hot out there. This global warming is wreaking havoc with my ensembles.
Well, the cardigans are out for at least another week.
I know. Maybe forever.
But Kevin, I'm going to say, I'm going to keep this very brief, is that I know a guy from the trading floor, good friend, his brother became a cop. His brother had as much business being a cop as I do being a jockey. He was a mean guy. Big, huge guy.
Yeah, and I remember a softball team I used to play against that had a lot of cops, and they were complete assholes.
Yeah. And
I'm glad we're a podcast, because I can't say that.
But I'm saying I would guess that if you and I went through, just, and we'll bring Russell with because he's good at this, and we just got all the records of everybody in the scene, police force, say there's 300 people, I don't know how many big people are in there, I'm going to say if we walk through all the different reports, we will find, I could be wrong on this, but generally I'm not, we would find that out of one of the top 10 people that had events before or any kind of complaints or anything, this guy would surface to the top. And nobody can pull the trigger.
And you know what? That would be part of the transparency you need as well. And that may or may not be fair to the individual, because maybe you have someone who, you know, gets more of the difficult situations. I don't know, but that's all part of it, and it's more, you know, it's not a simple thing, and it's not something that if you started doing it next week that everything would be fine the week afterwards.
We had to.
It's something that needs to be done over the long haul, and how long have we been dealing with this kind of stuff?
Well, Kevin,
and yet the police commissioners just they don't do anything to build up trust in their communities.
I had this discussion, very similar discussion with Frank on Monday regarding income tax. I consider it evasion, and he considers it the law overseas, all this other stuff. And he is of the same attitude as my younger brother, terrific guy, president of PTI Securities, wouldn't have anybody else. And they have this idea that somehow there's something wrong with the law, and that we should change the system to make it more difficult. My point is the same people will learn the game in the new system. And until somebody somewhere has the stones to walk up to that guy and say, you're no longer a cop. You can change the right of review. You can bring in a citizens board. You can do whatever the hell you damn well please. But someday, somewhere,
Somebody has to say that man should not be a cap. Get him to bleep out of here. And until people have the ability to do that, unions or no, I mean, there were five people on the trading floor that shouldn't have been there out of 1,500. You know, that's not very.
And I agree with you, Tom. There's so much more to it. But I do think for, you know, as I take it back and say, okay, what about our, you know, our business listeners? You know, there are lessons in there for our listeners as well. That when, you know, as you think about your business, you need to be thinking about crisis situations, because when the crisis happens, that's the worst time to be making it up. You need to, you know, you need to have something out front of it, and you have to, you know, consider scenarios all the time. You can't possibly consider every scenario, but the more that you have considered, the more other things are going to resemble it, so that when you account, when you have to deal with them, you have some preparation.
We ever watch?
You have some ability to respond because you've thought through it, and I just think it's so critical, and we see it in public services like policing, but it's there in the business world too. I mean, you saw it when United had that situation where they dragged the guy off the plane.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And Oscar, what's his last? Is it Oscar Schmidt, the CEO? And he's considered a great CEO in many respects. He got a lot of awards and was well recognized. You know, I don't know that I think United Airlines is great, but I digress. The point is that everything he said on day one was terrible.
Yeah.
You know, it was in emails, it was in all of that stuff, and it was all his communication was terrible. Everything he said on day two was much better. It was pitch perfect, and it was too damn late.
You ever, real quick, I'll let you go here. You ever watch Blue Bloods with Tom Selleck and what's her name?
I know you refer to it a lot. I haven't watched it.
Well, I mean, he's the police commissioner, and he's straight as an arrow, right? And so like two or three times a year, I don't watch as religiously as I used to, but there's always, just what you said, some cop appearing to do something, and the first time he sees it, his secretary runs in and says, "You better see this," and turns the TV in. The look at his face... I mean, Tom Selleck has a fairly expressive face. That's why he's been in TV forever. He looks at it, and you can just see him going, "Why me? what did I do to deserve this?" And then they immediately start, you know, working their way through it. But he's like, "How could somebody do something like that? what was he thinking?" You know, but he's got how many
but
people?
The thing is that you don't have time to think through that, to craft a response, to, you know, to come up with all of it, because it's viral already.
Oh yeah.
You got to be out there now, and the only way you can do that effectively is to have worked on it ahead of time.
And the answer usually is from him, or whoever wrote the show, is that we've all seen the thing. It looks pretty bad, but like anything else, it may not be the full story. Let's work our way through it. We're going to be honest with people. We'll come back and tell you. Basically, what were the results? What else can you say?
You can't, other than you have to, but you also have to refer to whatever trust you've managed to build over the years, over a longer period of time. And you have to have credibility when you stand up and say that, and that takes a long time. To build as well. You know, what's the expression about trust? It takes a long time to build and a moment to lose.
Well, that's the truth,
and a lifetime to get it back.
Well, now I trust Russell now, because he said last week he'd bring coffee, and he did.
I did.
I would trust Russell with. I don't know if I trust him with my life.
You don't know me very well.
Now, is he the guy who's is he any part of the group that's moved AV to the right?
Could be. You know, he's a persuasive dude. All right,
all right,
we're
take care,
way
buddy.
Over time.
All right,
so,
take care, buddy.
You know, why don't I let you get to a break and traffic, weather, sports, and Russell, and you guys have a good day. I'll talk to you Friday.
Take care. S&P futures down 75 cents. NASDAQ futures up 33. Apple's up. Pretty much the rest of the stocks in the Dow are down, which is kind of weird. Be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR. Innovation in Human Resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, owner of Home Source Realty and frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks radio show. If you're thinking about purchasing real estate, this summer could be a good time to shop around. Whether you're a novice or seasoned investor, low interest rates and good inventory make adding bricks and mortar investment to your portfolio an interesting possibility. Many a great fortune has begun with the purchase of property. Call me today for your personal investment consultation, and I would be happy to get you started on your path to prosperity. You can reach me at AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com or call me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Ollies, Mr. Professor Russell Rhodes. S&P futures down 75 cents. We're pretty quiet in Europe, and actually not very noisy in Asia, except for the Hang Seng being down a little bit. Not Hang Seng, the Shanghai. Everything else is pretty quiet this morning. A pretty reasonable tick down, or tick down in bonds, tick up in interest rates today. One more than we've seen in a while. That's probably the bigger story. But NASDAQ is up 31.
By the way, Chief, our buddy Joe tweeted us that the announced attendance at that Cubs-Astros game, which obviously this is a true number because, you know, there was no season ticket base or anything. Mm-hmm. This was like announced 2 days before or a day before, and everyone just drove up. 23,441 for the Zambrano game, which now Miller Park seats well over 40,000, so it was only half full.
You know what, Manny? I think it was like $20 a ticket, though.
I think you're probably right. I remember a friend and I strongly considered driving up there. In fact, we said we were going, and then he bailed like 5 minutes before we were about to leave. Like, I was actually like walking out to the car, and then he called me and said like, he couldn't make it, couldn't get out of work. And then I was like, whatever, it's fine, it'll save me a couple $100. And then, sure enough, Zambrano throws a no-hitter, and I didn't forgive him for about 3 months.
well, please correct me, whoever knows more about this than me, but I'm going to say it was like $20 general seating. So if you got there early, you could go sit in a seat like you never could afford before and for $20.
Very possible. And the game was 2 hours and 17 minutes, September 14th, 2008.
I'm going to say the first – by the way – Your guys now with the new thing where the starter only goes like six innings.
That's a good start now.
Well, yeah, but from now on, whatever your wife's going to wonder how much you're drinking down at my place. I'm going to have to call your ass because I cannot make it through. Your buddy the other night, who's the guy with the wacky bird look when he looks in, the alleged closer.
Oh, Kimbrel?
Yeah, 34 seconds between pitches.
Yeah, he's a slow one, for sure. He's actually been pitching a lot better his last few outings.
Yeah.
But
no,
he's always been a slow one.
But, I mean, I'm going to say the shortest game I ever watched was if you Google this. It was a Jenkins-Gibson game, and I think it was like an hour 35.
That's quick. I've been to a few Maddox starts that were right around 2 hours. And
yeah,
you, as a fan in the stadium, you feel like you didn't get your money's worth.
Yeah,
because they stopped serving beer at the seventh inning. Well, normally that's 2 hours. You know, 2 hours, 2 hour and 15 minutes. A Maddox game, that might be an hour and 15 minutes. You're like, wait a minute.
Yeah. Whoa.
Whoa. It's nice on TV, but not when I'm here.
Well, they never worry about stop serving beer when a game was over at 3 o'clock.
Well, I you might be right on that, but I seem to remember being at a couple of Maddox games and feeling like I was one beer less than normal.
Well, I mean, but those guys, I read something a few years ago, and the Cubs played somebody, and it was a 3.5 hour game. Well, the game the other night, against Detroit, the first game, it was 2-1. No, was it the last game against the Sox?
Last game against the Sox
was 4 hours.
In a 2-1 game, yeah, that's crazy.
But I mean, but at Fergie, I was timing him because they played one of those old games. He was 10.5 seconds at a plate. I mean, it's the difference between 30 and 10 is quite significant when you're throwing 100 pitches.
It adds up.
Darvish is really slow for a starter. But it works for him, whereas Hendricks is really fast for a starter, and that works for him. Usually, though, your starters work quickly, and your relievers, this day and age, work slowly. But for those two guys, they're the opposite.
Well, your big power guys that are throwing as hard as they can, I think they need more than 10.
Right.
I think Fergie was capable of throwing, 97, but he threw 91. You know, he didn't need it. Maybe against a few guys.
But you really don't need 97.
No.
I mean, if you know how to pitch.
It's all about late movement and location. Within reason. It can't be you and me throwing up there. Late movement and location.
I can get you in the upper 60s, but that's not going to get it done.
No, it's not going to get, but it gets it to the plate at least.
Yeah.
So we've got, I think baseball's doing it. I wonder, there hasn't been any outbreak at the Chicago Dogs games, and somewhere along the line here, I don't see how you don't put 500 people in a place. But, you know, maybe they're better. Maybe they don't want to go through all the hassle just for that many people. That could be, too. It's not worth it. But you would think you could open up one gate or something and have people in the bleachers. I don't know.
There's no doubt that you could make it work where you kept people spread out. If you can keep people spread out at outdoor beer patios when they're not spread out, and different things like that, you could easily do it in a ballpark, but it's obviously not worth it for them.
Yeah, I think the first experiment we're going to see with that is going to be college football because I'm still finishing up at Oklahoma State, so I get all the emails about how they're going to handle football, and I think they're going to use the stadium's only going to have 25% capacity. You're going to have to sit groups like 10 feet apart. I actually do think that's the one that we're going to get an idea as to whether we can do that safely.
Well, why are we? Disdaining, we have to have some. The way the countries handle this, I don't want to go into it. Tired of talking about it, but we have planes flying every day now.
Yes,
essentially asshole to elbow. Every seat is full. There's been no breakout. If there is, they're keeping it real quiet. Why are we thinking?
Because they're watching you and you're wearing your mask.
But you know what? I mean, I don't.
I mean, really? That's because you're being watched, and we behave better than. You know, when people are watching us, I remember seeing a stat, and I'm sure it's made up, but that people are 3 times more likely to wash their hands after going to the bathroom if somebody else happens to be in there. Just the instant social pressure or whatever. It's the same thing.
I'm gonna lay one on you here because I want to talk about the market with you.
Okay.
I'm gonna lay one on you here because I believe all the stuff I'm reading about masks. Everybody kind of knows my attitude about it. You could probably make the case whether or not it would be a dose that would get somebody sick or not. Mm-hmm. That if you're walking by somebody's table and they let out a huge sneeze or something, that maybe, some percentage of the sneeze gets nailed by the mask.
You basically have just slept with everybody they slept with in the last 20 years.
But what I'm saying is that...
I know what you're saying.
But
know
where I'm going with this, I think if everybody sat at a table and played poker for 3 hours in a room where there wasn't much air circulation, I don't think it makes any difference whatsoever whether you're wearing a mask.
Mm. No, absolutely. No,
everything's getting out anyway.
Yeah. Yeah.
Eventually, everybody's
breathing everybody else's air.
The idea for you being on a plane from Chicago to Honolulu and wearing a mask is helping. I
Well, it's like you said that, you know, we're not hearing, you know, everybody that was on.
It's not because of the mask, what I'm saying.
You don't think it's because of the mask? What do you think it is?
I think people, I think the area, a lot of places, people have already had it.
Oh, yeah. And they've built up the immunity already, so they're not coming down with it. Yeah. That's
I think
a lot more people have had it than I personally. And it, what's really funny is, let's say in reality, 10% of people have had it. I think 50% of people think they've had it. But I traveled internationally twice before when this thing was getting going, so I wouldn't be the least bit surprised. And I actually had this weird knocked on my butt couple of days in February out of nowhere.
I'll bet you had it.
And my my oldest also, after we traveled to Europe and came back in early January, she had some weird illness, although she's anxiety-ridden every once in a while, so it might have been that. But
Audrey was sick as a dog for 3 weeks in February. Every symptom was the same, as they say this is.
No, and I...
Well, the Center of Disease Control is admitting that 10 times more people have it than the test show. So we're up to what? 400,000 people, they think, have it. That's 40 million people. I mean, no, 4 million people have had it.
Yeah,
that's 40 million.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's...
No, it's 10 times. Yeah.
Yeah, 10 times. So
I hate moving the decimal and the zeros.
I mean, but we used to be able to do that. All right, Tatum.
I hate doing simple math.
Well, yeah. Russell, let me set the tone here for where I think the market sort of is. And I guess, first of all, tell me I'm nuts. And secondly, tell me when it's ever going to change. It looks like every time there's a crisis, some companies end up, you know, smelling like a rose.
Yeah.
Now, those places have done nothing but move north, okay, and maybe deserve it, although they're way ahead of any kind of P.E. ratio right now. I'm not talking about, you know, Amazon's 100 anyway, you know, so that's kind of crazy. But, you know, Apple's up to mid-20s, which is real high for them. But you've got these Spotify's and these other people that are totally off the chart. I mean, they're in terms of, you know, they're 10 times sales, for God's sake. They're not even 10 times earnings. So you've got that happening, where people are trying to define the new world and saying these are the winners in the new world.
Yeah.
Okay, now that's always been something you can't really, you sure as hell don't want to short it. Whether it was railroads or TV or whatever it was, right? Because, or even the dot bombs in 2000. Because you're early and you get carried out. You can't go against the grain there. Then there's seemingly a bunch of companies, and we talked about this a little bit on Monday with Frank, but I want your opinion, that appear to be seriously wounded, and I'm going to be gross and say the bone is still sticking out of the leg. It's not been set. They're not in the healing process. It's still out there. Mm-hmm. And in that group, I would put, you know, places like LYV, which is the Ticketmaster only entertainment venues. I'd put the airlines. I'd put the movie theaters. Those kinds of places. Even your baseball teams, or even for that lack of a term, your college football. I mean, the wound is open there, and nobody knows when the surgeon is going to get to you. And yet, all those stocks seem to have cratered and come back 40-50%. Not unlike, and I'm not leading the witness here, when the market crashed in 29, the market came pretty much most of the way back by 32. Mm-hmm. I'm saying this is not a new phenomenon, that things kind of come back, even though you wonder sort of why they are. Now, the market maybe is smart enough to say, even though August is longer than anybody thought this was going to be, come October, either we're going to have more and more of this herd immunity to where people aren't worrying about it. I mean, I looked at numbers last night. We're down from 60,000 people a day testing positive down to like 40 in the last 2 or 3 weeks. So that's a lot.
Yeah.
So maybe
progress.
Yeah, so maybe the market's just saying, okay, at this pace, by Thanksgiving, we're, I won't say all the way back, but we're doing something right. That could be. Mm-hmm. I question whether or not these companies are survivable even there. And I also question, and this is the one that is really troubling me, why I did this last Saturday, I have no idea. Maybe it was too hot outside. I went through and I looked at how much money the states are needing to be supported by the Fed, how much people need to be supported, how much these businesses need to be supported. And I look at the Fed income in terms of taxes, and I'm thinking they're going to piss away, or invest wisely, however we want to look at it, 4 to 5 years worth of tax revenue this year. And if you start pushing that to next year, I don't see how the hell you ever come back from that. Now, you tell me.
You come back from that with over a long period of time. That's it. Just it will take time to work those sort of things down. You know, much like the bailout in 2008, 2009, when they bought a bunch of really crappy paper and then they were able to turn around and sell it and actually make a small profit off of it. But they had the wherewithal to sit on it, whereas a private company or investor doesn't have the ability to sit on it. As far as the valuation of companies, I did some cash flow work on, you know, a lot of the companies that I felt like were going to get hit hard by this thing. And you know, if you're using the Buffett methodology of valuing a company and you discount back the cash flows kind of like in a bond like way, if you zeroed out the cash flows for the next couple of years, you pretty much got maybe a 10 to 15% drop in the overall stock market. And that was a worst case scenario situation. And I do think that we've come back because everybody was initially discounting the worst case scenario. And people feel like, you know, there's a safety net from the government, but also we'll be back to some sort of, right now I think the market is telling you that we're going to have some sort of normalcy in late 2021 or early 2022.
But there's no way. There's no way on earth these airlines make it to late 2021.
Yeah, they do. If the government keeps propping them up, and they cut their costs, and American just said they're going to cut 40,000 employees, you know, they'll be able to survive. Right, they're an essential service, and the government's not going to let them fail.
Okay, but that's where I'm going with this. Yeah. This is why the people, and I know you've researched this. That's why I'm asking you. I'm not driving a point here. I'm just I'm trying to elicit facts out of you. Facts. Just the facts, ma'am. Just the facts. Joe Friday. I don't see, is there a limit? Can a government give every airline another $5 billion?
Yeah.
From where?
But with the stroke of a couple of keys.
I know, but now you've got 30,000 more high paid people not working.
Right. And, you know, eventually.
That's one airline.
Eventually it might catch up with them, but as long as you don't see true inflation, the government can kind of keep on doing what they're doing.
What do you think? What do you mean by true inflation?
Like where people start to complain about it?
I think we're,
other than you.
I know.
The second I bring up inflation, I know where we're going.
But
it.
I know.
Yeah.
I know. I'm somewhat early with that, and you know why? But you know why, Russell? And I again, tell me where I'm wrong here. From my work during the 70s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I was younger in the 70s. I was between 3 and 13, but I've always been fascinated by numbers. So I would always pay attention to gas. I would always pay attention to, it just fascinated me to no end that prices continued to go up, especially like for cars back then. So I do recall inflation, and I do try to drive that one home when I'm teaching at Loyola. It's also my biggest fear. It really is.
Well, I don't have any possibility of studying this. You, on the other hand, could probably grab a couple of schmucks that want to get PhDs and tell them that this would be a great paper. I'm convinced, and I've never read anything on this, that the lag time, because of the incredible, and I'll say, you know, maybe stupid bureaucracy in the CPI numbers, the lag time is dramatically long. And I think it's not just today, okay? I think it absolutely screwed everybody's hero, Paul Volcker. And I'm absolutely convinced that the Resolution Trust and all those savings and loans did not have to go under. That he kept pushing the money supply and kept draining the system and had us in a recession way longer than we had to. Because I recall being on the trading floor, and Dr. Jane, I used to ride back and forth to work every day. We live in the same house down on the south side. You know, John's always been a friend. And we'd sit there. I remember the ride. He goes, "Tom, what the hell's going on? These guys continue to wring this money out of the system." He goes, "The stuff stopped going up 5 months ago. What are they doing?" You know, and John is a very observant guy. I said, "John, you know, you're absolutely right. I mean, I think the inflation stopped 6 months before Volcker stopped. But it took that long to work its way through the system. And it also took that long to build up. The guys in the Fed in the early 70s, even late 60s,
were pouring money into the system, and it took a real long time. If you look at, I've got the stuff right here. This I did do some research on. If you look at the years they were up 12.5% of the money supply, there was not any immediate inflation jump those years. But then it was 4%, it was 5%, it was 6%. It took many years for it to pop out at like a 12.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're doing the same thing here. And because when you see it, by my experience, and again, every time is different, when you see it, they'll point to me and say, this old fart saw it 3 years ago because he saw it before. I mean, these guys resist admitting it. And then finally, mm-hmm. when they do, then it's like, oh, let's open all the barn doors and let all the horses out. You know, I mean, that's what happened the last time. It's not like this was that long ago.
Right.
But right. I'm saying, not only is the pontification by our people wrong, the way the stuff, when you say when you get real inflation, everybody notices it. I think everybody notices it now. They just don't see a number that confirms them.
They just see little pockets of it.
Yeah.
It's sneaking up on them.
Well, I was saying last week I got my gas bill, and it's an apartment.
Uh-huh.
My customer service charge, no gas, because my stove doesn't work, but no gas,
mm-hmm.
$50. So I dig back in my checkbook, and I have some records. A year ago, same month, $40. I mean, 18 months ago. So it's up 25% in, I'm say, 18 months or 2 years. This is just a service charge. This isn't even any gas. Now, if I'm doing the CPI, if I'm one of the guys
mm-hmm.
who's actually trying to do this, because you teach people how to do statistics, I'm going to say the price of the gas probably isn't up at all. Matter of fact, if you look in CPI yesterday, like I did on the air, the price of natural gas over the last year for homeowners is down.
Yeah.
Okay, the gas might be down, but the service charge is now 80%, 90% of the bill. And that's not part of the CPI.
That's the charge to get it to you.
Yeah.
Even though you're not using it.
Yeah, that's the beauty of it. So my point is, whatever it is, the stuff flying out of my pocket is going up by the day.
Do they break the service charge out
yeah.
by about how much of that money maybe goes to the city of Chicago?
It just says customer service charges probably, maybe that was $48 and the city was $2 or something like that. Mm-hmm. The place where you really get stuck where the sun don't shine is on cable.
Oh yeah.
The cable's like $25-$30 a month for the city.
Yeah.
They
were able to sneak that's one that they've been sneaking in on people for a long time. Your telecommunications, the different fees and stuff for all of those services that everybody uses. And I feel like they almost sneak it in on us, because how many of us are actually going to look through the bill and see what part of it is going to not going to AT&T?
Well, and now you look at the right now, you see UPS is back from like $90 to $160. I'm going to say that those guys have raised some rates in the last few years, way more than the CPI.
Yeah.
Federal Express, same way. So they're
delivering more stuff, too.
Yeah, and then the ability of when you start talking about places that over a period of time you grump a little bit about them becoming more monopoly power, and I grump more than most, and some people probably like to listen because of the others probably don't, but because I all of a sudden, if one day, you know, Menards and Home Depot, if somebody accuses them of being a duopoly, in some areas they are,
mm-hmm.
and all of a sudden, you know, there's court cases on court cases. God, Russell, in the ensuing 5 years, even if they're found guilty, they could raise prices 15-20% tomorrow. Well, where else would you and I go?
We've got no choice. And that I listened the first hour, and I heard you talking about Amazon and everybody else knocking out the other guys and then maybe being able to start jacking up the prices on us. And that is very much of a possibility and something that all generations should be paying attention to. I'm not getting in the generation and arguing with the two of you.
No, well, my point is that when you don't enforce something
mm-hmm.
for such a long period of time. I mean, right now, if you drive through the city today,
mm-hmm.
would you even remotely think that it a bicycle is supposed to stop at a stop sign?
Oh, gosh, no.
When's the last time you saw somebody stop, Manny?
Never, unless... stop light, yeah. Stop yeah. sign, never.
Never.
Yeah.
Yeah, would you even... So I'm saying...
It's almost as if they don't have to.
Right. So what I'm saying, when is the last time anybody's seen an antitrust case?
It is tiring to stop at every stop sign, though, when they're every block.
It is.
Well, it is in a car, too, but at least then you're not doing a pushing.
Yes.
But
What if you look at the bright side, man? You don't have a stick shift.
Well, or you're not Fred Flintstone.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness.
Stopping with your feet. I mean, that would be.
What a, you know, trivia. What I mean, you guys know.
Oh, look at the durable goods orders.
Yeah. Wow. Up 11 versus 5 estimate. The
Everything's fixed.
Fred and Wilma were the first primetime couple, because that was primetime,
yep,
to sleep in the same bed.
Yes, they were.
Really?
Yeah. Well,
yeah.
Robin and Laura had the twin beds.
Yeah. Desi and Lucy, yeah, they were beds. Always in. They were in
twin beds.
Yep.
SP Futures up 150. SP Futures up 22. Kind of wonder how they all got any kids, but they did. Yeah,
where the hell did little Ricky come from?
Yeah, where did he come from? We'll be right back. Stacks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Harrell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here.
Hello, and welcome to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howie. Mr. Russell Rhodes, manly and attired in a high-end dress shirt and shorts.
I got to do a thing where they're going to put me on camera, but only from the waist up.
You have the sport coat and a tie, too?
I do.
I would do that, too, though, on a day like today, 95. Yeah. I blame Matty Weber for that. Dow down 19. Everything in the Dow looks a little peaked here, except for Apple's up 380. Nothing major moves here. We did have one Spotify's earnings last night. They're way up. Somebody's up last night. Over in Europe, DAX up 66.5%. FTSE down 10.2%. CAC around up 15.3%. Over in Asia, Nikkei quiet, only down 5. Call that flat. Shanghai down 43. It's 1.3%. Hang Seng, however, is up 5 flat. So the Shanghai's the loser over there. Pretty much everywhere else is not much anything. Yesterday, just as a review, the Dow was down 60. S&P up 12. NASDAQ up 88. Bonds, and here's where the kind of the move is today, Russell. We're up to 0.71 on the 10-year. We were 0.65 last Wednesday when you were here. We were in the mid-sixes, I believe. The Bund, minus 0.40. Japan, over 0.04, 0.042. Man, oh, man, I never thought I'd see that coming. I mean, it's been years since those guys were positive. Oil, real quiet, down 13 cents, 43.22. Rent down 7 cents, 45.79. This is the trade of the year here, and I didn't do it. And you know what? I don't have anybody, well, I don't know enough about the oil business to pick the natural gas companies anyway. But natural gas, 251, up another 3 cents. That was $1.48, I'm going to say, in April. And that's a huge contract, Russell. RBOB, 134, down 4 cents, but it's still higher than it has been. Gold down 7 bucks, 19.15. Silver up 4 cents, it's 26.32. Copper, another 2 cents toward that $3 number, 2.96. I keep trying to get long copper on one of these ETFs, but they're pretty crummy, Russell. They're not much trading there. I haven't been able to do it. Eddie, what do you got for us, Travis? Weather Sports.
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Still very quiet, Chief, coming inbound on any of the area expressways. So enjoy a nice quiet commute if you're heading in like Russell did this morning. No issues or delays to report. Only a slight issue to report would be down south, 8094 on the eastbound side at the Calumet Avenue exit. There's some road construction that has that exit closed, and it's causing a bit of a slowdown if you're heading eastbound on 8094 just across the Indiana border there. But other than that, we're very quiet, so enjoy a nice quiet commute. Weather today, it's going to be hot and steamy today, similar to yesterday, but even a bit warmer. We'll reach a high of 93. And the high humidity as well, with a real feel approaching 100 degrees out there. So stay outside or stay inside if you can. Right now it's clear and 78 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 113. Right now it's clear and 89. In sports, Lucas Giolito became the 19th edition of no-hitters for the Chicago White Sox as he no-hit the Pirates last night. Sox beat the Pirates 4-0. Giolito struck out 13 and walked just one on 101 pitches in his no-hitter, the first of his career. Sox have now won 8 out of 9. They are red hot. Cubs lost to the Tigers in Detroit 7-1. Diamondbacks lost to the Rockies 5-4. Chief.
Little piece of decent news out of the Cubs. I thought Quintana looked pretty decent.
I did, too, until his final inning, and then he looked like he ran out of gas, which is not surprising because he hadn't pitched yet this year. And he started walking some guys, and then he ended up getting dinged for 3 runs after that grand slam, even though he had already left the game. But, yeah, I agree with you. I thought, for the most part, he looked really good. By the way, we do have a question for Russell.
Uh-oh.
But it's expecting him to put his Bitcoin hat back on, and I haven't heard him talk about Bitcoin in a long time, so if you don't want me to ask it, I won't.
No, go ahead.
Okay, this is from Henry.
Uh-huh.
Henry writes in from the 815, so downstate. He says, is there a downside to buying GBTC versus BTC? It would be easier in my IRA to use Grayscale, 1 or 2% only. Now, I don't know what any of that means, but...
Oh, gosh almighty. Get his email address.
I have it.
Okay, well, give it to me before I walk out. The Grayscale thing, I would have to look at it, and I haven't looked at it in a while, but You just want to make sure that it's not trading. At times, it's traded at a premium relative to spot Bitcoin. In fact, at one time, I can remember some of the funds like that were already pricing in a 50-60% increase. I have not looked at that one in some time, but that's what I would, before I did anything, I would check what the discount or what the premium is for the fund relative to spot Bitcoin.
Very good. And wow. Henry, I will also give your email address to Russell.
Yeah.
And he'd be happy to follow up with that.
Yeah.
I have a generic question regarding those things. Everybody knows my sort of my feeling on them, but I'll ask it this way, Russell, to you, who knows way more about it than I do. If you look at currency theory, or the theory of what exactly becomes a medium of exchange, right, which is what currency is, correct?
Yeah.
Just about all the research going back to, caveman times, is whatever your, quote, currency, whatever you want to call it, happens to be, whether it's stone or gold or you name it, it has to have some sort of a value on its own, in which case everything else is then priced relatively. Whereas cigarettes in a concentration camp say that a value of their own, not to me, I don't smoke, but to other people, and the market would say that a half pint is worth 8 cigarettes or 9 or 6.
Yeah.
That's the marketing routine. But at the end of the day, if nobody wanted your cigarettes, you could smoke them and they had a value if you liked to smoke.
Yeah.
Now, I think that if with the fiat currencies now, which are having less and less value to themselves per se, a lot of them are just being printed, and we have people in this trap where they say, well, the dollar is, if I'll say to somebody, well, look at what they're just degrading your dollar. What do you mean? The dollar index is doing fine. That's not the point. If everybody in the world that has a currency adds 50% to it this year, on a relative basis, they're not going to change. But relative to your house, relative to your car, or to a chunk of gold, it's going to change, right? Because there's now 50% more of it.
Right.
But if there's going to be a medium of exchange that is going to replace these fiat currencies, especially be a competitor to them, especially what the central banks are doing, or if you are so convinced you don't want everybody knowing, I really don't want the Fed to know if I just lost $10 to Matty Weber playing golf.
Right.
Screw him.
I want to just be able to do that kind of stuff.
I just want to be able to pay.
Plus, we bet much bigger than that.
Right, we're huge.
$20, $25 a hole.
Oh, absolutely. $25 a point. 4-point scotch. But I'm saying whatever it is, and I think there would be somewhat of a competitor / replacement, why do people think that whatever it is can have no value? I mean, why? I would say that in my mind, again, you tell me where I'm wrong again, it would have to be notes on, gallons of oil or something in some place where there's oil storage, or there needs to be something at the end of the day. I can go get my 5 gallons of oil in the middle of Oklahoma if I really wanted to, type of thing. I mean, the idea that another currency that's worth nothing that some idiot comes out with, why that is now going to be the medium of exchange just because you can do it on a computer. Where am I wrong here? Where do we make that jump?
You're skipping the greater fool theory.
Well, that's
for one, but initially, a lot of the Bitcoin disciple folks were saying it's going to be the way that you can buy stuff and you can be a little bit more anonymous when you buy stuff and it's easier to transfer cash. And at some point, things tipped from that to being more of a store of value. And you hear about country, like I'm just going to randomly say one country's name and I'm not saying anything's happening bad to them right now, but you'll hear about, the currency devaluation. Let's just say Venezuela, huge devaluation in Venezuela. And you think, well, gosh, all the people that were very wealthy in Venezuela are suddenly, they don't have, a pot to piss in anymore. What a lot of those folks do is they actually will transfer money into U.S. dollars for a little while and then transfer it back. And I think that things like Bitcoin have taken on that role. In China, they've got a lot of control over, the only way that you could really get money out of China is you go to Macau and you launder it through a casino. But there are also ways that, you know, you can try to transfer money into a cryptocurrency like Bitcoin. And whenever we have these, that, you know, when we just had this global crisis over the last few months, you saw a big rally in Bitcoin. And I think that's where that rally's coming from, is people looking, they're considering it more of a safe haven than anything else.
We back in the day.
And I'm not saying I agree with that. I just think that's what's happening.
I'm gonna raise you one on the sinister part of this, my friend.
Ooh.
We, back in the day, I don't know if you knew of us at the time, but we didn't put the seminars together, but there was a seminar company that used Chicago as a base, and they had option seminars, I'm gonna say twice a month. And they were a whole week, you know, it started. There was a get together on Monday night because people flew in on Monday, so it wasn't Monday through Friday 8 hours, but it was Tuesday through Thursday 8 hours, reception on Monday and half a day on Friday. So it was real stuff.
Yeah.
And we were not part of the marketing or anything like that, because you can't do that if you're a brokerage firm. But we would give a couple of talks on how orders were put in, and we would engineer through the CBOE a mock trading session. Mm-hmm. Which people loved. I mean, so
oh yeah.
So anyway, we had a bunch of people. So anyway, one couple times we had groups in from Mexico, and one of the times was a bunch of big shots. I mean, my brother Dan and Dr. J used to go down a lot, and they helped those guys design their exchange. I mean, you know, my brother and Dr. J are pretty smart guys. Matter of fact, they wrote the futures test down there, the first futures test they had, and talk about being on a phone with Dr. J. He goes, "Yeah, we gave those guys a test." I go, "John, they don't have a test." "Well, they do now." "Don't tell me you and Dad wrote it." "Yes, we did." And I go, "Okay."
That's fantastic.
But you know what? Both of them are capable of doing that. It's not like they don't know what they're doing. They do.
Yeah.
And so these guys are up here, and all of a sudden the night before, they used to actually devalue the currency, right? So they devalued the peso. It hasn't happened in a while. And they devalued it like 10%. And I go, "Man, I feel sorry for you guys." The guy goes, "What are you talking about?" And I said, "Well, I mean, that means everybody." He goes, "Not everybody." He says, "The people who knew it was coming put their money in dollars the night before, and now I'm 10% richer than the guy next door who didn't know it was coming." They're much more forthright from Mexico about trading on inside information than people here. The guy says, "No, I moved my money." This guy was rich. Because I moved my money to the Caymans last night, and when I brought it back today, I now have... I had 90 pesos, now I got 100. Okay. I mean, he goes, I'm 10% more wealthy than the people around me. And I, you know what? I guess I should have been able to think that through, Russell, but I would never do something like that. I mean, I guess it would cross my mind, but the thought of, you know, I'm just not that sneaky. But, you know, I guess that's the way to go. But I mean, you know, the Venezuelan stock market is rocketed up in terms of their currency. Sort of like ours. Just saying.
No, absolutely. But it was more about the cryptocurrency thing and you know what it's being used for now, and I really think that's what it's being used for. That
I don't know
that and buying drugs on the dark web.
But I don't have. I don't think I have your email on my double secret.
Yes, you do.
No, I do on my on this one here.
Oh.
When I send stuff from home, I use my PTI chief email. And anyway, I sent everybody one, and they were talking about. Whenever the Fed, now here's when you write an article and you don't tell the whole story. And I hope you never do this, and I hope your kids
I don't. Always hold back about 20%.
The real stuff? Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
Well, this guy writes an article, or lady, had to do with like five times other in history where the Fed has tried to decrease their balance sheet and how it caused somewhat of a recession like every time. Now, I'm going to say that it was 1921-22. From anybody who saw our 33% drop in GDP in the last quarter, that was the worst except for quarter two in 1922, correct? When it was like 21% or something. Then they talk about 1948, 49, and 2000, whatever. Anyway, when you read the list, you recognize all of them, right? Everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know how you, and the conclusion was that you never essentially dropped the balance sheet. But now, if you contrast that against monetary theory, at least classical monetary theory, see, I can talk to Russell about stuff like this because he knows what I'm talking about. The classical monetary theory is, if you have an economy that's growing 3% a year, which is pretty friggin' good, if you're an economy like ours, right, because it's so big to start with,
yeah.
you want to engineer your money supply growth, which is not easy to do, by the way, because if you're growing fast, it's going to want to grow faster, and if you're going slower, it's going to want to go slower, because we can create money here just by going and making a loan at a bank, right?
Right.
So you really want your money supply growing somewhere between 3.5 and 4. You want it growing slightly faster than the growth rate. All right, so then you come into these areas when growth rate ain't doing so hot. And, you know, like now, like a growth rate like being below zero. So the Fed decides to pour in some money to kind of prime the pump. And in some ways, they're trying to stop a recession, but they're also, in a lot of ways, trying to delay the recession in hopes that whatever's causing it in the first place kind of fixes itself, right?
And cushion the recession.
So
that's what I always
So how do you? Yeah. So how do you, no matter what you do, I mean, I mean, even if it's watering your lawn, if you're supposed to give it 20 gallons a day and you give it 40 one day and cut back the next day it's liable to look brown, right? I mean, how does the Fed, what does that mean? Now that you're growing money supply by 35% a year, you have to keep doing that forever. You can never, everybody knows that the minute they pull back on this, even if, even if the COVID is beaten to a pulp by some, by one of these, shots, which I sure hope it is a month from now, and they pull back at all, this market's coming down some. It's not going to come down as much as it went up, but it's going to come down some because all of a sudden you're not just pouring money in there every day. And if the market comes back 5 or 8% and it lands there and everybody's happy, I'm going to say job well done. You know, but
you think it's going to be worse than that?
I do, and I and but I'm saying why does everybody not think that when you pull back on something like that, you're going to cause a little bit. I mean, right now.
Well, I think we do. I think everybody does because I'm going to go back to the reaction to the last crisis where we continued to have quantitative easing and the market was always braced for some sort of announcement that they were going to, back off of that. You know, we went through, there were these, announcement dates where everybody was afraid they were going to say, okay, we're done with this quantitative easing stuff, and the stock market would always weaken in front of that, and then they wouldn't be as harsh as we thought they were going to be, and then we kept working our way up. What I actually think they should do is I think they should start to ease off without announcing that that's what they've done.
They might
avoid the psychological part of it that's just going to make it worse.
Well, when you go off the, I use this term, when you go off the reservation, like with the QE3, funny you mention, you mentioned that.
Yeah, no, I think that's the best. I think that's the best equivalent to what's going on right now that we have.
Except, let me throw this one at you. But normally, they're going to buy. Well, their charter is supposed to be to buy U.S. Treasuries.
Yeah,
to where you?
Oh, they're buying everything.
I know, but I'm saying when you do that, you're in control of the runoff, for lack of a better term. If I go out and buy all these mortgages, okay, say I buy $1 billion worth of mortgages or $10 billion. And all of a sudden, I drive the rates down a little bit. Now, I went and bought them. Now, so I put $10 billion into the economy and juiced the hell out of the economy, right? This money's all over the place. Rates go down. The big guys seem to get it. Amazon goes out and borrows $1 billion at 2% they don't even need. You know, that kind of crap.
Yeah.
So that starts to happen. It finds its way in the stock market. But the problem with mortgages, Russell, is they don't control it. 10% of those people could refinance the next month. And instead of that money going back to the bank, okay, and into being part of reserves, it flies to the Federal Reserve and it comes out of the system just as if they went and sold something. So when you do mortgages, instead of buying a 20-year bond where you've got it for 20 years, you may get 10% of this back in your face in 6 months.
Oh, yeah.
Which
you
is, I think,
probably will.
So you force yourself to continue to buy just to stay even. Which I think they got in their trick bag, and I think that was a mistake on their part.
To buy the mortgages 10 years ago.
Well, I'm saying you can't control.
Yeah.
In other words, you got ahead of the system. You put $10 billion out into the population.
Yeah.
But you can't control when it comes flying back at you. Every time somebody refinances a house, you get a check. You say, "Where'd this come from? We didn't sell off a bond." No, you didn't have to.
No, they retired. They, you know, you owned the tranche where people were retiring their mortgage.
So I think they probably shouldn't do that because they can't control it. Mm-hmm. Man, what's your opinion on that?
Well, I mean, what they've been buying now, they're not going to have any control over it. But they've been buying the corporate bonds across the board, and
well, those at least are going to stay 20 years, probably.
Well, maybe.
Unless the place goes under.
They probably are, because your only risk there is if they're callable. And, you know, if any of these companies are paying a ridiculous amount of interest, they, you know, maybe they try to take advantage of that. But I don't think that there are a whole lot of those out there.
No.
I mean, there are junk bonds that are junk rated bonds that are paying like 2% and 3% now.
Plus, do you think the Fed has the staff to actually analyze these things?
Oh gosh, no!
I'm sure they didn't analyze the mortgage.
No, you've got to assume that there are bond dealers all over the place that were calling the Fed desk and saying, "You want to buy this?" And they're like, "Sure,
I
got to go spend $100 billion today." Sure.
What do you think if I talk to my buddies, the Fed, if they ever come out of their house? I haven't seen them in ages, and tell them they can have my Suburban for $25,000.
They probably wouldn't, but you know what? If it wasn't their money and they like you, they might.
If it comes out of New York, they might. They don't even see it. If you saw it, you wouldn't give me that. Yeah. but wonder, I mean, what are they, you know, how much are they paying? Who are they buying it from? Who are they favoring? Did you see this morning, and I when I listened to this, before you came downstairs, Manny, evidently in the state of Pennsylvania, some guy, I think he was a guy, decided to have a scam. You know, I wish I had imagination like this. He somehow got, I'm going to say, 1,000 guys in the prisons to apply for the unemployment.
That's fantastic.
And they're all getting the checks.
That's fantastic.
They like their homes and stuff, and they're paying rent, they're buying cars. Guys are in jail. When they come out, they're going to have, you know, at least they're in a...
They're going to have more money than us, because they have no overhead.
They have no overhead.
That's fantastic.
So they're going after the guy. And, you know,
they should go after the guy.
Well, they should, except I think what people don't get is what the government's been doing.
Mm-hmm.
When they call it helicopter money, if you don't know the definition of helicopter money, it's basically state in Madison, it's crowded. I won't say there's a riot, but it's crowded.
It used to be crowded.
Now it's empty. You open up the helicopter and you drop $100 bills. That's what you're doing. I mean, in the Fed's eyes, they don't care if the inmates got the dough. I mean, you and I care. They just want it out there.
They just want it out there. You know, that's a prime example of something that I've been trying to teach my kids, that you can get away with something once, but don't ever try to overdo it.
Right.
And if he'd only done it with 100 inmates, he might have gotten away with it.
Well, it's like people telling you if the check came and the person was dead. The first word out of the Treasury was cash it. Or if you did that with someone's social security check, that's a fraud.
Yeah, but
they just wanted the $1,200 out there.
I sent one back. So,
but who do you send it to?
I sent it back. I looked on a website and there was instructions on how to send it back.
Okay,
I did do that when my father passed away. He passed away on June 20th, and we got his early July check, and I was like, well, that. Yeah,
I've heard stories, just going back years, where if you're owed $500 on your income tax, it's never happened to me, but you get the thing and it says $5,000. Trying to give that money back to them is like a year-long procedure.
Well, I can only fathom.
Now, if you cash it, it's fraud.
Yeah.
But you can't give it back to them either and get your $500. what I'm saying, they the whole point of this is they don't care. They just want it out there.
Yeah. They're not in the business of taking the money back.
I had some weird guys calling me. I didn't talk about it much on the show. The Illinois people got this PPP money.
Uh-huh.
There's something like 27,000 firms in the state of Illinois that got over $150,000. And there's probably another 30 that got less than $150,000 or more.
Mm-hmm.
And people were calling me going, hey, these bleeps, they're like the garbage trucks, you know, guys in, Oak Lawn or something. They got paid the whole way and still got this money. And I said I get it. I mean, they probably quote, and you're in my world of morality, they probably shouldn't have gotten it.
Yet, yeah.
In the Fed's world of morality, they're in business. They're out there. They paid people. Get it out there.
Money's out there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's not you're in my way. I don't think they'd want us on the Fed board.
But, no.
No.
Hey,
anyway, we got a dash. S&P futures up a buck. NASDAQ futures up 26. Russell, as usual, really good stuff.
You betcha.
And so you're teaching. You got class today? You're pumping out?
I got class today. I got three different classes today.
Oh, good for you,
teaching
buddy.
Teaching till one.
How can I throw something at you in a classroom on computer?
I'll send you a link if you really have interest.
Oh, good. I might. Can I ask stupid questions?
Yeah, you're more than welcome to come and grill me anytime.
All right, buddy. Back tomorrow, Stacks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.